It's Give It Up with Marco Hinton on Urban Media Today Radio.
Welcome to the Give It Up podcast on urbanmediatoday.com, where we always give it up for excellence, greatness, and leadership and continue to use sports as a metaphor for life. We are also a podcast that dissects social justice issues from a local position with a global perspective. Let me get it right. I messed it up last week, too, but I'm human, y'all. Y'all know how this is. But as an athlete and educator with a passion for social justice, I love interviewing experts and everyday people seeking to inspire, influence, and impact local, regional, and global change. Today, I got my brother cousin on here. He's been on the podcast before, but not necessarily in this capacity. It is none other than one of the smartest people I know. Him and Dr. Bay, and then I added Danny to that. So I got the trio of excellent smart people that I know. But it is my cousin, Malcolm Thomas. Welcome to the Give It Up podcast. How are you doing, brother, cousin Malcolm?
Super duper duper. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here. I feel great. I was looking forward to this all week, and I'm very glad to talk to you and to the listening audience.
I love it. The what they call it? Pod squad. That's what Glennon Doyle calls hers, the pod squad.
Pod squad? Okay, well,
I stole that. I'm stealing it. So as you know, Malcolm and listeners, basically, sometimes I spotlight the guest, and this is one of those times. I spotlighted Malcolm before. However, he wasn't on the podcast when I did the spotlight, and I was thinking about that today. I was like, that was just not smart. You got to be on the podcast when you get spotlighted. So listen to this. Malcolm Raymond, that is your middle name, right?
That's correct. Yes,
there
it is.
Malcolm Raymond Thomas was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and attended Pittsburgh Public Schools. Shout out to the PPS. Graduating from Peabody High School, he later attended Penn State University and graduated with a bachelor's in education and a concentration in Black Studies. While at PSU, he was one of the co-founders of African School, a program designed to introduce African culture as a means of addressing contemporary issues. Malcolm Thomas, worked in education, violence prevention, social services for over the past 25 years. He has studied and trained in the healing arts of Qigong and meditation for over 20 years. He has offered community classes and workshops in plant-based nutrition, mindfulness meditation, Qigong, and African culture for the past two decades. In 07, Mr. Thomas founded One Nation Education and Leadership Training, a program focusing on educational program for and about youth. In this capacity, he has worked with several thousand students over 18 schools through psychoeducational groups, instructional presentations, assemblies, and school-wide initiatives. Mr. Thomas is a sought-after consultant, speaker, and trainer who specializes in strategies for empowering youth and building capacity with those who serve the Thomas has served as an organizer, facilitator, keynote speaker with a number of conferences and organizations. He is the director of the Reaching Back program, which focuses on youth leadership, development, brain health, nutrition, chess, and public debate. A major focus of this program is the application of Asia's cultural wisdom and the promotion of African-American males and youth to re-enter the teaching profession. He is also co-founder and founding director of the Sankofa Leadership Institute, in an ongoing effort to cultivate leadership, health, and sustainability in adult men who work with African-American youth in Western Pennsylvania. Lastly, he's my cousin, y'all. We already know that, and we already said it. Brilliant educator, dean of students of Life Male STEAM Academy, and founder of the Authentic Educator and Manhood Maximizer program that helps educators and students alike achieve excellence. Let's give it up for my brother, cousin, Malcolm Raymond Minnickin Thomas.
Salut, salut.
Woo, okay. Spotlight questions. My first question for you is this. Why'd you want to become an educator?
You know, it's interesting because I wanted to initially go into psychology. I was always fascinated with the mind. And at different times, I had different professions. I used to be into art, but I realized I couldn't really help people through art in the way, I couldn't see a way, an avenue to do that in the way that I really wanted to, at least at the time. I didn't know if I was good enough anyway to make that a career that was lucrative.
Let me interrupt. And yes, you were good enough to be an artist. For sure, y'all. Y'all should see some of his work.
Thank you for the vote, cuz. So what happened is actually I got interested in wanting to do something about what was going on in the 90s. There was a lot of violence. There was a lot of things happening. And at the time, my sister was in high school. My sister Kalila was in high school, and I'm in college at the time. And so during this time, and I was in liberal arts, just trying to find my major, really thinking about going into psychology. One day I was tutoring my cousin Autumn. So shout out to Autumn. Autumn at the time, her name was Autumn Sudith. So a shout out to Autumn, Autumn Bowes now, but I was her tutor. And I would do it, initially just, of course I wanted to help her, but it was a way to make some additional money and to help my cousin at the same time. And so I would tutor her for 2 hours from 4 to 6 or so. And so on this particular day, we were tutoring and she couldn't get a problem. It was algebra, some algebraic stuff. And she was very, very bright. And at one point she started crying. And I remember she started to cry. And I said, okay, I wanted to teach it to her a different way. So lo and behold, we taught it a few different ways. And I said, I want you to do a teach back with me. I want you to teach it back to me. If you teach it back to me, then I'll know, so you be the teacher, I'll be the student. And she taught me the lesson over the next period of time. And there was a point when she got it. And I said to her, I said, see, I told you, you got it. And she just started crying. And she jumped into my arms and just cried. And I looked up at the clock and it was almost 9 o'clock. And I realized, I said, I think this is what I'm good at. So I think this is what I'm good at. Cause I had a feeling I could never get from anything else I had ever done. Like in that moment, I had a feeling, even now when I think about it, it's like I'd never had that feeling with anything else I had done. I said, I think this is what I'm good at. And I said, I think this is what I should be doing. And shout out to Autumn, I decided I wanted to be a teacher. And so I went into education classes. I was in school for a while because I changed my major so many times. And got into education, got excited about my classes, and have worked in education in some capacity ever since.
I love it. And I should have started with this question. So that's an amazing story, first of all. I started getting choked up, which I tend to do. You and a couple other people, the way you tell a story will definitely make me get teared up. So, yeah. I held it back a little bit that time. So I should have started with this. So Penn State University.
Right.
Because I know, I'm just saying, you guys already said how smart he was. I remember back in the day, the SATs was on fleek, as they say. High SAT score. So I feel like you could almost went anywhere in the country. Why Penn State University?
Well, for me, Penn State was, at the time I went to school, I had a girlfriend here in high school. Who was 2 years behind me. But I did not feel that going to school in Pittsburgh was good for me. I felt like I needed to get away from home, have a collegiate experience that gave me an opportunity to be on my own. I felt like I had to learn some independent skills and learn to do some things away from my parents and my familiar group of friends and family around the city. Penn State was close enough that I could get home quickly and easily. It's 2 hours away, but far enough that I was in a collegiate, immersed in a collegiate world. I went up for a visit to see the school, and it just was like, wow. And I was just amazed at the campus. It was nothing like Pitt. It was like, it's like a town, mm-hmm. if you've ever been there. And so I loved that environment for me. And it's the only school I applied to. It was the first school I applied to. I got in immediately. And so I didn't apply to any more schools after that.
You were just
a lot of people don't know that I never applied to anything other than Penn State. Once I got in right away and I didn't apply to anything else.
That was it. So it was Penn State all the way.
Yeah. And my dad went to Penn State. So that was a big part of it as well. Shout out to my dad. He went to Penn State. And so it was like a legacy thing a little bit too. So I ended up going to Penn State. That was an influence, I'm sure, that was pretty prominent as well.
Uncle Al.
I didn't apply to any other schools.
I love it. So Uncle Allen, you end up at Penn State, you're majoring education, and I know you and Dr. Jamil Bey had a major influence on that campus, and I wish I was there. Right. I wish I was there for the experience and for the things that you guys built and created together, and I'm sure along with some other people. But talk about the cultural impact that I believe you guys had on campus through the African school or anything else that you guys did that I may not even know about, that sort of helped bring the African-American student community together?
Well, shout out to Dr. Jamil Bey, who was my partner. So what happened is Jamil and I actually went to high school together, and I knew of him through you. But we didn't associate with each other in high school. Jamil was 2 years ahead of me in high school, so I didn't really hang with him. He was, you know, he was someone I never was really around in high school. But I knew of Jamil really indirectly through you, because he lived in Belsouver. So that's how I knew of the Bay family and Jamil. And so when I would see him, I had a previous association for meeting him through you. But we didn't interact. So in college, once we saw each other again, he had been at a branch campus. And I had been there for a year or two. And so when he came back came to main campus, he was really interested in a guy named Asa Hilliard. And he had some stuff on Asa Hilliard. And when we connected, we were kind of on the same page from the very first day. Hmm. I remember talking to a brother I knew named Sekou, and he's like, man, you got to see this brother. You should be working with this brother, Jamil. You know, he's serious. Because we had already been a part of, when I came up as a freshman, there was this whole movement to divest from South Africa. It was a whole movement for the professors to gain tenure. It was a whole just movement that was like nothing I'd ever seen. I remember going to a Black Caucus meeting the very first, second week I was in school. And mind you, there was only one Black person I saw the first day I was there on campus. So this is one of the biggest campuses I've ever known of. And I saw one Black person the entire first day.
Wow.
And I called my mom, like, Mom, I think this is a mistake. I don't know if I'm in the right place. And she said, just give it some time, you know? And so I saw this flyer that said Black Caucus, and I just took it off the pole. I probably shouldn't have done that. But I took it down and said, I'm going to this. I know there's going to be some Black people at this meeting, whatever this is. And so I went, and it was a life-changing experience. It was standing room only at the Paul Robeson Cultural Center. You couldn't even get a seat. Everybody was, it was like, capacity in the room was like maybe 350 or 400. It seemed like there was about 600 people in there. Mm-hmm. And it was some of the most dynamic people there. Seth Williams, who used to be the attorney, district attorney in Philly, he was speaking when I walked in. He was the president of Blackhawks at the time.
Wow.
And different other people, Cecil Gray. And shout out to John Bogle, who was the head of the re-education committee. So I joined that committee and the political action committee. Through that, I started getting into the protest activity on campus. And then the guys I was with through protest, and we had took over the telecom building, and they brought the SWAT team in and the whole thing. They arrested us. It was a lot. They had a big national news up there. These people then saw Jamil, and like, we need to have him a part of what we're doing. And so we formed a thing called Kabila Maasai, which was like a fraternity sorority that was African-based. A lot of people don't know about that.
Wow.
And so we formed that together, that group of people. And Jamil and I, out of that group, we ended up being just like, you know, freaking frack, really super tight. And we were together every single day. We would read, we listened to all kinds of the same music. We would go to the gym, but we would read and study and be planning political events. And so he was also in education. And so our desire was to try to create a movement on campus. And so out of that came, on my end, it was like a two-pronged approach. I was a part of the Re-Ed committee, and we had created a thing called African School. I was one of the co-founding people. A guy named Shahid Tayborn and John Bogle were there at the beginning of that. But I was a part of that group when we started African School. I went on from that to keep African School going. I was the head of that committee. And Jamil started something called Friday Forum.
Okay.
Right? And so they were two. So Friday Forum was a way to talk about different issues on campus, and African School was to talk about cultural things and all that stuff. And one happened on Saturday morning, one happened on Friday night. And then he created, and I had this newsletter that was not really, didn't really gain great popularity. It was called the One Nation News, Our New Emerging Nation. And it was anonymous. Nobody knew who was doing it except the people who knew me. And he started something that took off like wildfire called the Negro Weekly. Mm. Right? So these would come out. The one came out first, then he started the Negro Weekly, right? As a comment on what he called Negro behavior. So it was like a satirical newsletter.
I can see that. I can see. Right? Okay, hold that thought.
But the long and short is that's how we got hooked up and decided we kind of all made an oath that we were going to go back home and do something to change the conditions for people through various means, and ours was education.
I love it. Hold that thought. We're going to take our first commercial break. My cousin Malcolm is giving me the scoop on Penn State University back in, what was that, like the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, it was the early, late 80s, early 90s. For me, it went on to the mid-90s.
We'll talk about that too.
But yeah.
Hey, this is Give It Up Podcast on UrbanMediaToday.com, and we'll be right back.
Whenever you're in a good mood for some good soul food, the hot spot is Carmi's Soul Food Restaurant. Yes, from chicken and waffles, mouth-watering baked macaroni and cheese, fried chicken, baked chicken, meatloaf, smothered pork chops, smothered chicken, barbecue ribs, candy yams, mean greens, shrimp and grits, and there's so much more. Carmi's Soul Food will have you coming back over and over and over again. Find their full menu at CarmiRestaurant.com. And for pickup only, it's Carmi Express, located at 1219 Federal Street on the north side. Call 412-231-0100 or log on to CarmiRestaurant.com.
Welcome back to Give It Up. I got my cousin Malcolm Thomas on here. I just want to encourage you guys, listen to the radio station, UrbanMediaToday.com. It's Urban Media Radio. They are blowing things up. Dr. Bay, that we just got done talking about, and we'll continue to talk about him probably a little bit. I know he was a DJ up on that Penn State campus back in the day. And tell me about this. You said the Negro Weekly. Right. And you had the One Nation News?
One Nation News. But One Nation News, there was only a few issues of that that came out, and it was anonymous. Everybody knew Jamil did the Negro Weekly. And it came out a little later, but it was kind of associated with Friday Forum, and it was just a satirical newsletter. But the point was is that we kind of had this kind of Starsky and Hutch way of dealing with things on campus, right? Where he would kind of challenge people on their behavior and make jokes. And but also do educational things. We would talk about controversial subjects. And what I would do was do a lot of things that were rooted in African history. And my thrust from the very beginning was that history leaves clues. And over the years, as I learned that human beings were on the African continent for 60,000 years before there was one human being anywhere else on Earth, meaning there was not one human being anywhere else on the planet Earth. 60,000 years, the only human beings, Homo sapiens, were confined to Africa for 60,000 years. So that means culture developed there for a length of time that you know, greatly multiplies how long. Just think about, you know, the amount of recorded history since 3200 BC. So there's a lot to learn as you go back and study the accumulated wisdom of that time. So what I do is I study what's called the ageless wisdom of those civilizations going all the way back and try to retrieve that, because I don't believe that there's anything new under the sun. I believe that most things are recycled. And if you go back far enough and you cast a net wide enough, you'll be able to find solutions to contemporary problems. And I find the best way to go is to the place where people live the first and the longest. And so that's what I've devoted my life to.
I love it. Is that the Sankofa? I learned about Sankofa from you.
That's Sankofa.
Talk about Sankofa, because Sankofa, you know, I just learned it from
Sankofa
you.
Sankofa is the overarching name of our company. Myself, my partner is Joshua Colbert. And, you know, of course, my program was called Reaching Back. You know, Reaching Back is a play on Sankofa, meaning you retrieve what you have lost, your identity, but also your culture. There's ways of living, there's life ways, and there's also information that we have lost about how to live in a way that does not harm others or destroy nature, and it optimizes our ability to be healthy and successful and unified with the other people on the planet Earth. So for me, we wanted to put that into a secular form where we could give that to people in an educational setting. So we created what has now become known as the Sankofa Society. And it is the organizational umbrella for the suite of products that we have. The flagship product is the Manhood Maximizer, which is designed to take the idea of manhood and say that manhood can only be maximized, not through physical development, not through the growth of your testosterone, your brawn, your body, but through the growth of your psyche, your psychological growth, your character growth. So character growth is what makes you a man or an adult and qualifies you, therefore, to assume positions of leadership, influence, professional responsibility with an ethical and moral foundation. And so back in Africa, the one thing I did learn is the concentration was not first on being a good scientist, a good doctor, a good teacher, but becoming a good person. You must first become a good person, and then you use that character foundation to now take your talent and provide services to the world.
Come on, y'all. This is good, amazing information. So I'm going to jump around. I had some questions written down, but since you brought up the program that you and Joshua Colbert have created, let's go there now. You okay. Said the Manhood Maximizer. But before we talk specifically about that, talk about how does the society treat, because I know you work primarily with Black boys. Talk about how the society, the differences, if there are differences, I think there are, in the way that society treats Black boys as opposed to other boys, and how the approach that you're taking sort of takes into account that whole Sankofa, as well as the culturally significant things that are happening right now in this colonized way that we're living.
Well, you know, I think that the first thing is to just, and even to reverse the language you had, as you talked about other boys, I think that the thing that happens with Black boys is that they are othered. They are othered by society. They become seen as, there's a book, it's called Other People's Children. It's an educational book. And what I realize is a lot of educators, people don't necessarily see those children as their children. So they're adultified, they're criminalized. You know, a Black boy who's doing something that may be a sign more of immaturity or just adolescent, you know, waywardness is seen as a thug. Mm. These are kids. Sometimes these are 12 and 13 year old boys. You know, I've been with boys who have access to firearms, and you sit them down one-on-one, they're just like, they was called, you called me Mr. Malcolm. There's Mr. Malcolm, I'm just scared. I'm out here. I don't want nobody to kill me. And they're just little kids. So they're in an environment where not only the society sees them that way, but I think the more potent thing, and maybe 2 to 3 times more potent, is that that seed has been put into the boys' minds and our minds. So we see ourselves that way. And so we play out those stereotypes as self-fulfilling prophecies. We see ourselves as, we don't see ourselves as scholarly. We don't see ourselves as people who create and run the world. We don't see ourselves as the types of people who can create history. Most people can't even name, for example, 20 Black people before slavery. But if there was 60,000 years of unwritten history, and then we have another 5,000 years of history before slavery. History started in 3200 BC. Slavery starts in 1619, right? So that's almost 5,000 years of history, almost, right? Over 4,000 years. We can't name 20 people.
Wow.
And so that means that we don't have any familiarity with our experience before we were put into second-class citizenship. And so your experience starts with that, what starts with subjugation, you know? And so we don't have a view, in the words of, I think, who puts it best is Trabian Shorters, who does the Be Me Project, a brother who I've talked to a lot, not recently, but when he first was starting the project, we don't see Black boys and men as community assets. So, you know, we don't dignify those boys and men as people who are in the world with inherent value. So I like to treat our boys at our school as the next big thing, you know, as I knew you went before you became this other thing, right? And I look at them that way and I talk to them that way, because we believe that about ourselves. And that is more powerful than what anyone thinks of us. They've projected that belief onto us. So I think it's very important to shift that narrative and identity. And I think it's also important then to shift the behavior and habits that allow us to conform to that identity. When you think of yourself a certain way, you the things that you do consistently will have to conform to that identity. And even, let's say you get an A on a paper, you'll see that as a deviation. You won't even see that as who you are. You'll see that as just a fluke.
Right.
Something that just happened. You just had a good day, you know, as opposed to that as being something inherent in you. Wow. And so you'll always seek experiences that confirm that negative image that you have of yourself. And that's important because that is how I think Black boys are treated differently and seen differently than others. Our boys, one of our boys said one day, we were in school, they said, you know, this is just, we just some hood kids. What do you expect?
Wow.
And I said, well, first of all, you don't even live in a hood. You live in Penn Hills in a house with a lawn that's just the size of the parking lot outside. I said, second of all, no, we're not. Even if we do live there, that's not who we are. That's the environment we've been placed in.
Wow.
It doesn't mean that's who you are. Malcolm X said, just, you know, just because you have kittens in the oven, don't make them biscuits. So we have to understand that where you are doesn't determine who you are. And that's what we have to get off of us, because we've been placed into the situations that we're in large part. And then we confirm that through our behavior as long as we see ourselves that way. And then there's other things in place that help to reinforce that structurally in society.
Wow. Woo! We get our next commercial break. This is going fast, Brother Malcolm.
Yes.
But when we come back, what I want you to talk about, you talked about the moment that you knew that you thought that education was the thing that you were good at.
Right.
But I want to know is, what was the moment, if there was a moment or a story behind, when you decided that Black boys needed something structurally and you came up with this whole idea of manhood maximization. So when we come back, talk about that moment.
We'll do. Let's
hey,
do it.
This is the Give It Up podcast on urbanmediatoday.com, and we'll be right back.
I hate taking medications, blood pressure pills, diabetes pills,
blackpeoplefeelgreat.com,
cholesterol pills,
blackpeoplefeelgreat.com,
and diets are so freaking hard. I'm never going to lose weight.
Blackpeoplefeelgreat.com.
Girl, why do you keep repeating yourself?
I'm telling you, go to blackpeoplefeelgreat.com. They've got natural products studied by institutions like the Cleveland Clinic. Since I ordered from your site, my A1C, my weight, and my blood pressure had dropped. My doctor's so thrilled, she took me off my medication. There's even the money-back guarantee if your blood work doesn't improve.
Money back? What? But what if I got to lose? I'm going to blackpeoplefeelgreat.com right now.
Welcome back to Give It Up on urbanmediatoday.com. I have my cousin Malcolm Raymond Thomas on here just educating us, talking about 60,000 years. Listen, we were here 60,000 years before history was recorded. This is some serious stuff, y'all. My mind's about to explode, and I'm trying to look for the 20 people before slavery, because I don't know them either. This is something else.
And you don't. And the reason you don't know them is because we haven't been taught them. Mm. You know, just like you don't know Michelle Obama's phone number. We haven't been given that information, but it exists, and we have to provide it, because your self-identity really grows out of a group identity. It grows out of a group identity. Like, if you don't think good about humanity, you won't think, you might not think, you might, you thinking human beings are inherently flawed, inherently sneaky, inherently haters, inherently underachievers, inherently untrustworthy. But if you understand the divinity in people, you understand that there's something else beneath that that we can get to. If you don't understand the dignity and the achievements of Black people or African Americans, you'll think that we're just second class citizens who have businesses that are substandard, who live in certain environments, who aren't intellectually at the same level as, or good at only certain pursuits in life, athletics, creative pursuits and other things, can do certain types of things, but not other types of things, right? So we have to get that out of our minds and ask us, who put that thought there and where did it come from? So that's the goal of that. And it goes into the Manhood Maximizer Project.
But, so was that a part of, is that what you were seeing when you were talking about, you know, the boys that saying that they lived in the hood as if the hood was in them, as
Right.
opposed to like a location, is that something that precipitated you to want to develop this program?
Well, my very first job, I went to get a job at the Board of Education, and the waiting list was long. But the guy who I interviewed with, he seemed, impressed with the interview. His name was Alex Matthews, and he talked about it. And he's like, "Man,
Shout out to Alex Matthews, my
he
man,
thought
Alex
I should be
Matthews.
doing something at a high level in the district." And this is when I'm 24 at the time, or 25. And so he recommended me less than 2 weeks later for another job at the Hill House as a teacher there. And I got hired immediately on the spot. And it was a young fathers and mothers program. I started with the mothers for the first, I don't know, 10 weeks, 20, 15, 20 weeks, whatever. And then the fathers program rolled around, and I was working with boys every single day. And my next job was the National Council for Urban Peace and Justice, where we worked with, these are older guys. These are guys who did not graduate from high school. And the National Council worked with gang, so-called gang members. But more so initially, I was the director of a program called Visions. And so I always worked with males and females, but it was the work with the boys that I realized was really significant, because my Young Fathers program work really allowed me to connect with those brothers and see. They're close to my age now, because I'm coming out of school. I'm like 24, 25. These guys are like 18, 19. When I see them now, they're like 48, 49, 50 years old. And they still remember when we went on the retreats. They still remember the circle discussions. They still remember all the stuff we did. And it's like that stayed with them. And so that also forged me. And I remember an experience I had at the Young Fathers program. One of the boys, I'll call him, his name was Daryl. And we were about to take the GED test. And it was coming up, I think, on Monday, I want to say. This was Friday. And we were about to do our review. And I said, "Where's D?" And he's like, "Well, he left." "So what do you mean he left?" And I looked out the window. He's walking across the parking lot. So I ran. I said, "Where you going, man? We're doing a review. The test is on Monday." He's like, "Man, F that test. F that test." And I got in front of him. I said, "Look, man, you go have to walk through me and tell me something, because we've been doing this for months." And he said, "F that test." He says, "You don't know what it's like to be me." And he teared up in his eyes. I'll never forget it. He said, "I'm not good at stuff like this." And I could tell how afraid he was to take this test. And he started crying. And I said, "Listen, man." I said, "Who do you think knows more, you or me?" He said, "You." He said, "I know you can do it. And I'm not letting you leave." "So that's what it is. You're not leaving. I know you can do it. And you just don't know it yet. I know more than you about this." I said, "So we're going to take this test. And if it's the last thing we ever do." And he went back and he passed the test. And I realized that that was more meaningful to me. That type of work was more meaningful to me, because it was an educational program. But really, what it was a man, it became a manhood development program. So we started a mentoring program inside of that. And I realized my real work was working on the souls and the identity of men. Right, we have this idea that men are inherently certain ways, and we carry that forth. There's even a notion that's gained tremendous popularity about toxic masculinity. So if you're not careful, masculinity can seem tantamount to something which is inherently noxious and detrimental. But there's a healing masculinity. There's a way to be as a man
Ooh,
that
say that
offers peace.
again. There's a
There's a
what? A healing?
healing masculinity, right? We call it the warrior healer. And that's a term I first heard from my brother Keith Murphy. Shout out to Tugby. And it stuck with me immediately, and I used it ever since, for the last 12 years. But the idea of healing was what I was into anyway. And I was like, the warrior healer. I was like, yeah. And when a man who can be calm and strong but gentle, can be peaceful, can respond to aggression with peace and with love while not losing their strength, can respond to adversity with virtue and dignity, can treat other people without utilizing aggression, and physical brute force can lead through right, not might, right? So these are things that I said, these have to become factors. And for me, I have to model these things. And so I had to find, the journey for me really was one of, it's like memoir, where I had to begin to write about, think about the ways I needed to get better as an adult man. Because I didn't even feel like I was a full-grown adult in my 20s. I felt like I still had a lot of characteristics that needed to change that only I would know about. That's why you can never compare yourself to another person in the world, because you never know what demons they have to slay in their mind that you never heard about. So I'm working on stuff inside of me, insecurities and things that no one else would ever know about but me. Mm-hmm. Bad habits. I felt like I should be much more than I was in my life at the time. So I like, I need to be a real man. And what does that look like? And so I began to study men throughout history and in my family, and also women and people who had great character. And I began to take those traits from people. And over the years, leading up to the last few years, there were 22 virtues that I was able to assemble, and myself and my partner, Josh, were able to assemble, which are the virtues of the manhood maximizer. And these are based on the behaviors that I observed in people that I thought were exhibiting divine or exalted character in certain situations.
And go there. Give it the acronym and talk to us.
Well, the acronym, so that these are cleanliness. So I noticed that men, just something basic is the first, I took myself back through evolution and I said, what would I be as an infant? I took myself to being a little baby to what I'd have to become a man. So the first thing I'd have to be is clean and sanitary, have good hygiene. So you have to learn and exhibit that. Cleaning your body, cleaning your environment. I noticed that men that I respect, they keep things, they're clean. They smell clean. They look clean. They don't litter. They don't leave a mess and clutter. They don't destroy the environment. They don't put things into their body, right? So these are things. So cleanliness, nurturance, how to promote health and growth, how to preserve life, promote health and growth, right? How do you do that in yourself and others? So they were affirmative in their speech. They balanced, they had a work rest balance. They had, they didn't intoxicate themselves on purpose, right? They put nourishing things into their body. They took nutrition seriously. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at all the men, the top men, you know, humility. They're not people who try to just be the leader all the time. All the greatest people are following something or someone. Mm-hmm. And the very greatest among them will follow anybody. They will follow a child. If a child says something true, they will yield to that. They're not threatened by a woman's sovereignty, wisdom, expertise, or power. They're not threatened by the prominence of someone else. So humility was a factor. I think I feel like you can't be a real leader without being humble. Sacrifice. They understand that you have to give, but not just give, but give up. Give something to something higher or greater than yourself. So we say you must give up to go up. You must give up to grow up. You must give up on the way up. You must give up more to stay up. They're respectful and courteous, meaning they speak, you know, what I call beautiful speech. They use courtesy in their words. You could say something firm to someone, but still be courteous. Would you please take that hat off? Instead of, you know, there's a way to say it. Would you guys please stop running down the hall? You know better than that. Did we not talk about that? Thank you very much. They are, thoughtful and kind. So people use the word kind so much, we changed it to thoughtfulness because we wanted to become more than just a tag word like kindness has become. So thoughtful is, you know, they think about the welfare of others and how to avoid doing harm and to do things that are helpful. So you're thinking about the impact of my words, speech, and everything on the greater good and the other person. They are assertive. They are buoyant. So assertive person speaks up, stands up. They take ideas and put them into action. They're just not about talk, but they're action oriented. And a buoyant person is optimistic and cheerful. You know, a lot of brothers think they got a mean mug. But I noticed the guys I really, really were healed by, they smile. They project joy. They infuse what they're doing with joy. They have a sense of positive expectancy in life. The other virtues, resoluteness or restraint. They have self-control. They don't just overeat, overspend. They budget. They don't just say the first thing that comes to their mind. They don't just are not driven by lust. Orderliness. They maintain order in their environment, but they also know what's important and what's not important, right? How to keep the first things first, how to keep the most important thing the most important thing. They don't give most of their time and energy, attention and money to people and things that are of lesser importance. But they make sure the primary people and things in their life get the most energy and attention. Right? You don't give attention to women on the internet and neglect your spouse. You don't give more attention to the people in Hollywood than your children. Right? So they had a sense of prioritization in their lives. And they also understood roles, that ultimately we have to have an agreement about how we play roles with people. You can't be everything. And you have to understand how we have an interdependence. There's an order to their lives. Resoluteness, they're firm. If they say something, they do it. If they start something, they stick to it. You know, they can make a decision. They're not people who are easily distracted. There's a resoluteness to them, right? There's a firmness there that balances those other yielding qualities, right? But you have to have a firmness. So a lot of times masculine is seen as aggression. I see one of the most important qualities to have as a man is to be firm, to be able to be consistent with what you say, right? Not just being forceful. The difference between being firm and being forceful. The other ones are perseverance. They don't give up or quit in the middle. They don't cut corners, and they have a sense of overarching purpose to their lives. Excellence, we took magnanimity and we changed it to excellence, meaning they're forgiving and take the high position. And they strive for great things. The greatest people know that God created you, and therefore, why are you doing something to be mediocre? Why are you settling to be average? It's a dishonor to everything about you to be average. There's no place for people in the world to aim low. We need people to aim and aspire to great things because we have problems that require that type of thinking. So excellence is to try to be great and to take a high position with people. I'm not going to retaliate. I will never return injury or error to another person, right? So they are forgiving. One of the highest virtues is to forgive. That's excellence. They are, they have gratitude. There's a sense of appreciation. I remember my grandfather, who was a hero of mine. I got him a small thing one time and he kept that up. He cried. He'd have the smallest little thing and he would polish it and keep his shoes clean. He took care of his stuff. He had a sense of, he always thought everything was important. And he treated everybody like they were important. And I learned that from him.
Yes, he did.
Not to be wasteful. Don't throw food away. He never threw food away. To be appreciative. And always to try to return the favor to others, to the person or to someone else. Wisdom is to, and selfishness is to always make sure that you're not taking more than your share, that you're always sharing what you have, and that you're always doing things with a light heart. I don't give just to get. I give because I'm in a position to give. I give because I've already received. If I have it, that means I've already received. So I'm in a position to give, right? I don't give to be thanked or to be honored or to be emotionally blackmailed later. I don't blackmail you, right? Like, I did this for you. You owe me three. Wisdom is to be able to solve problems, prevent problems, and to create situations of mutual benefit. Like what's going on in the Middle East. It's not a question of which side you're on. It's how do we create a mutually beneficial situation where the maximum good can happen for everybody involved? That's wisdom. How do we solve a problem that creates no problems elsewhere? And wisdom is also, you know, one of the famous quotes from Marcus Aurelius is, you know, the man who knows truth is not equal to the man who loves truth.
Wow.
So to love the truth, to want the truth, to seek the truth, and never turn away from what you know is right. The other ones, adaptability, courage, responsibility, integrity, to be whole in one, to be the same inside as you are outside. That's huge, because one of the most important qualities of a maximized man is sincerity, to hold the truth in your mind the same as you would project outwardly. Wow. So part of that is not even holding bad thoughts about people. You know, think of the people in ways that are, that you would, you know, however you're presenting yourself, be that way inside. Be sincere. Don't operate from ulterior motives. And then the last two are self-awareness, to be able to separate yourself from your thoughts, feelings, and actions, and your body, and to look at yourself, to be mindful of yourself, how you affect others, and the things you're thinking and reacting to, and also to be able to evaluate yourself against an objective standard, not compare yourself to others, right? So that way, if someone gives you criticism or praise, neither one of them is defining. You have to know who you are. So your knowledge of yourself should be superior to other people's opinions of you. So, you know, what people think about you is not as important as what you know about you. And then the last one is equanimity, which is complete balance and peace. It's to be able to not to be impartial, to want for all what you want for yourself, to not lean to one side, to be have a sense of poise and peace in your decision making, and to have a life of overall balance. So the key for any virtue is to be balanced. You want to be kind or thoughtful, but not so thoughtful that you lose yourself. You want to be firm, but not too firm. There's times to yield. So that all the virtues, there's an architecture and symmetry between them that creates balance, because the highest principle is peace and balance. Ultimately, you have to have a wheel that is balanced.
Woo! I don't even know what to say after that, y'all. I mean, I know it's from boys to men. That's what we're calling this episode. But I felt like that was from girls to women. That was for everybody and anybody. The 22 virtues. When we come back, maybe we could dive into people, educators, students, people in your life that maybe you can pull out one of the virtues and give an example of somebody that you really look up to, somebody that was a role model for you that really exemplified a couple of the virtues. Sure. That would be great. Let's think about that.
I guess it's easy for me to do. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Right. This is the last commercial break. We will have about 10 minutes when we come back. Give It Up podcast on urbanmediatoday.com. We'll be right back.
Attention all sports fans. Are you ready for in-depth coverage of historically black college and university sports and professional sports? Look no further than HBCU, Pro Sports Media Association. We're a national media organization dedicated to covering the stories and achievements of HBCU student athletes and pro players. As a member, you'll have access to a community of local and national black journalists, all working together to increase coverage of HBCU programs. Join us today. Be a part of the Legion of HBCU and Pro Sports Reporters. Visit us at HBCUProSportsMedia.com and stay informed on the latest HBCU and Pro Sports news.
Welcome back to Give It Up. I got my cousin Malcolm Thomas. He is the co-founder of the Manhood Maximizer Program. The journey from boys to become for boys. To becoming men, and he's just been dropping some gems with the 22 virtues. I'm trying to figure out how many did I have and possess. And I was asking before the break if he could just pull out maybe a couple virtues and talk about people that have modeled that particular virtue for him in his life. That would be awesome.
Wow. So let me just think of one. One that I'll think of is I'll use my father. I'll use my parents. So for my father, I saw someone who was very sacrificing. You know, he did a lot of things for us and with us, as did my mother. But you know, they were really unsung. As I became a father, I appreciated it more. And my father was also someone who gave up certain things to become a better person. I remember my father when I was 12 years old. He told me with tears in his eyes, actually. And it was a pivotal experience in my life. He said, "I will never drink again, and I'm sorry." And he said, "I'm sorry, I'm never going to drink again. I'm telling you this as my son." And he never, ever to this day, ever touched alcohol ever again in his life.
Wow.
It was in November. I remember when that happened, thinking to myself, like, wow, you know, that really helped me with my discipline. Because I felt like you know, people see me, there's certain things I've stopped doing, but it was really because I saw my dad do that. And I saw he had to reorganize his whole life to stop drinking. Like the friends he had and places he went and things he did, it was a part of his whole way of life. He had to change his whole life to do that. And my mom was someone who was very courageous. Like she would stand on something. And even though everybody would be against her, certain things she was into, nobody on either side of the family thought like she did with her on certain ways. Nobody ate like we did, but she wouldn't change. She was very resolute with it too. She wouldn't change. She wouldn't give in. And even when people would say things and come against her, she wouldn't, if she thought she was right, she wouldn't back down. This boy stole my bike when I was 10. It was a Huffy Thunder Road. And these were teenagers. They had took it. And I was scared of these kids. I didn't know them. They were down the street. They said, "Where's your bike?" They said, "So-and-so has it down the street." I said, "It's okay, Mom." She said, "No, we're going to get that bike." And she walked, drove down there. She walked. We got out of the car. She walked right into the garage with these kids. There was like four or five of them. She said, "Is this your bike?" And they had put some other stuff on it. I said, "Well, it didn't have this." She said, "No, no. Is this your bike? You said a Huffy Thunder Road. Is this your bike?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "I'm taking my son's bike up out of here." And she took my bike and walked the bike out.
Wow.
And it's like, I was like, wow. And these were older boys, and she took it and walked out, and she didn't say nothing. Got in the car. She put the bike in the car and we drove home.
Wow.
Go on, Ruth. That's how she was with certain things. And she's such an unassuming person in a lot of ways. People don't know if she believes something, she's going to stand on it, and you're not going to back her down. You're not going to back her down. There's like an iron rod in her. She'll go for it, especially stuff with her children. She was very, very courageous. And these are kids I was scared of, but she walked up in there and she was just like, "Yeah, let's go." So those were examples for me. And I could give countless others from other people, but those were, I'll take two from my mom and my dad.
I love it. I had so many questions. We're going to have to do a part two and dive a little bit deeper.
Yeah, and I'm going to give one more shout out to my sister about buoyancy. Khalilah's always happy. She always is in a good mood. And so people love to be around her because she's just inherently fun and joyful. And it's like infectious. So I remember even her looking up to me, she would say growing up, I always admired that about her. And so I was the type of person, and to this day, I think the thing that really helps me is I try to incorporate things from everybody around me to try to make myself better. So I'm always looking at ways to make myself a better person. And I'm looking at things. So these are people in my family, in my household. I'm like, this is something I need to incorporate this to become a better person. So that's something I'm watching my little sister all through my life be that way to this day.
Listen. I got choked up just now. Y'all can't see me unless you're watching this on YouTube. Because when she told me she wasn't coming for Christmas, I was like beside myself. I was like,
people love being around her. They love being in her environment because she's happy. She's happy. And that's what we all want. And she brings that sunshine.
Absolutely.
And I don't even know if I've ever told her this. But I always was watching that.
Yeah. Choked up, y'all. Hang on. Oof. Yeah, for sure.
Let me get my plug. My computer's about to die. Hold on. Keep going.
We are on this Give It Up podcast. This is live, y'all. So listen, computers die. We're doing it on the Zoom. He gonna plug this up and we're gonna be good to go.
Keep going.
And while he's plugging up, he can still hear me. So what I'm saying is, I want to tell people, how can they get access? Their boys get access to this Manhood Maximizer program. And I know you're writing a book, trying to put all your thoughts and things into that. So tell us about like where the writing process is, how people can learn more about this, your social media, before we close with questions.
Well, the unofficial book is called The Warrior Codes, or The Codes of the Warrior Healer. And it's a book it's a guide to living. It was influenced for me by some of the men and people throughout the ages who wrote books on living. And the first one was a priest back in ancient Egypt that we call Kemet. And it was called the Book of Ptahhotep and the Teachings of Amenemhat, Son of Connect. And it was a book of moral teachings that they would give their sons. And so I was also influenced by a book called Meditations that was written by Marcus Aurelius. He was a philosopher king from Rome. If you ever see the movie Gladiator, Marcus Aurelius is the king in that movie, his emperor, so-called. And so he wrote a book called Meditations, which was really a book to himself on how to live as a king, how to be a king.
Wow.
Be a ruler. And so these are the kind of books I would read. I was really into philosophy growing up. And I always wanted to, you know, be a better person, really, you know. And I feel like that's the substance of the love you give to people is to be better and to be more patient and tolerant with what you may perceive as someone else's shortcomings. So I would read these books on people who were trying to be better, and they influenced me to want to write something for myself initially, but then to live those things and then to share the fruits of that experience with other people in a way that had universal application.
Love it.
So I think that's a part of life, is taking your experience and try to give it to people in a way that has universal meaning and can create greater good.
You guys, I just got to say this. So my cousin Malcolm is somebody, if he starts speaking at any family gathering, he'll tell you, I start pulling out my phone to record it. Because I know he's going to say something that I'm going to want to remember later. So I just did it this past weekend. Our Aunt Barbara passed away, and I just want to say, you know, we'll miss you, and we love you, and we're talking about, we're getting together as a family, and we can talk about this on the next podcast, because we got about 2-3 minutes left. Shout out to Aunt Barb. Just, I mean, what you said at the funeral was just like amazing.
Yeah, really. I had a moment, because I was talking about how she used to be she was my mom's protector. And as it happened, I looked up and my mom was looking right at me, and I saw she looked like that little girl. As she looked at me, she had tears in her eyes for the first time. She started crying, and I saw that she looked like the little girl, and I could see it in her face. And it just, I don't know, it just affected me, because I could feel what my aunt meant to her and to all of us. So shout out to Aunt Barb for what you've been to us in our lives.
Absolutely. So we got to hurry to a close. Wait, give your social media first, because I know people are going to want to.
Social media. So, I mean, on Instagram, I think my Instagram is Bromin6, and Bromin6. They used to call me Brother Minister, and they also call me Brother Minikek. So I just put, I'm Bromin.
It makes sense.
My birthday, my address was 6 growing up, and my birthday is the 15th, so I put 6. And Malcolm Minikek Thomas on Facebook is the only ones I have, and I think I have Bromin6 on Twitter as well, with so-called former Twitter X, but I don't really use Twitter much.
Yeah, they'll find you. They will find you. Okay, closer questions, because we got like 2 minutes left. For the closer questions, these are like one word, couple sentences. If I feel like I need to dive a little bit deeper into it, I may. But your first closer question is this, Malcolm. What do you know for sure?
I knew for sure that I was loved. I felt loved. I always felt like I had a family where someone loved me. I felt like I had parents who loved me. I felt like my mother loved me. My grandmother loved us. So there was always someone. I felt like I had love for my cousins. I felt like the people, I felt my sister loved me. I always felt like I was blessed to feel loved. I had meaningful relationships with my family. And that was important for me, because I think it enabled me to give love to people, because I received it.
Amen. Okay, question number two. If you could make one rule or law for society, what would it be?
That all people had to undergo some growth before they could occupy any position of leadership. They had to meet a certain standard before they could occupy any position of authority or leadership in any field or any area of life.
That's a good one. And I feel it should be some of those 22 virtues. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
And last but not least, who would you like to recognize or give it up before you go? Give it up for before you go?
I'm just going to give it up for my grandmother. Her name was Narlee Hinton. She was someone who represented family for me. She was someone who always kept us together. And, I remember one time me and you got into an argument about something, and she made us hug and work it out right in the middle of the living room. She started crying and she said, "I don't like that." She said, "I want you to hug and I want you to make up right now." And she started crying. And I, you know, that's who she was to me. And she was about her family. She called people in the family every day. And that was everything to her. So as I get older, I realize it's important to touch the world, but it's sometimes equally and more important to be close with your family and to make sure that you are keeping first things first with your family. And so that's one of the things I wanted to say is, although I'm trying to do something to affect other people, I'm really trying to use the love that I received, an example from my grandmother, to be worthy of the love that she gave me.
Wow, you guys, we got to end it right there. Shout out to our grandmother, mother, Gnarly R. Henson, and the rest of our family. This has been the Give It Up podcast on Urban Media Today. Thank you to my cousin Malcolm, everybody. Oh, and
Shout
I can't forget. I can't forget.
out.
Shout outs to Kiki Trevin and Mr. Alan Lincoln.
Yes,
Everybody,
yes.
give it up and be blessed.
The views and opinions expressed on podcast do not necessarily reflect on the official policy or position of Urban Media Today and Urban Media Today Radio. Any content provided by our guests, sponsors, or advertisers are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.